falafel and really a new set of malachas. So that's a little bit of a question, as we'll see. The malacha of Zorah is a little bit of a lesser known malacha, and defining it is very much an open question, as we'll see. And may be a very significant dispute as to how to understand just what the malacha means. And there's a strong possibility, at least, that this links up with one or two other malachos, and therefore helps us to introduce a whole new set. That goes to the question of really what the malacha is. So in general, with many of the malachas, we usually start off by asking for a translation. So does anybody want to try to translate for me into English what Zorah is? Sam? Winnowing. Thank you. How about English? So what does winnowing mean? Has anyone here ever winnowed?
Winnowing means to take the wheat that was already broken, the outside covering of the wheat, and throw it into the air to remove the chaff from the wheat itself.
Okay, so the basic process, you're saying, in terms of the Mishkan, is even to just focus on what's going on without even the complicated agricultural words. You're throwing something into the air, and stuff that you don't want, to take away any jargon whatsoever, stuff that you don't want blows away, and the stuff that you do want stays with you. All right, is that enough of a definition? Do we have any other possible definitions? Is there any other aspects to add to it?
Through the force of wind.
Wind, okay, so you're assuming, probably correctly, that wind is a major player in this process. So what's happening through the process of wind?
The separation is happening through the wind.
Separation through wind. Okay, so is that a good definition? So we have winnowing, we have separation through wind. Any other possible definitions, Jonathan?
Separating ochel from psolas from wind.
Separating ochel from psolas. When you use the words ochel and psolas, what you're trying to emphasize is one thing you want and one thing you don't want, right? So if you have any familiarity with borer, which we're not up to yet, that's coming up next. But borer, so we'll find the language of ochel and psolas, literally meaning food and waste. And as we'll see in the context of borer, those terms are not always used literally, but they're used relatively. So ochel to mean anything that you want, and psolas to mean what you don't want. So even though, for example, it could be both things are actual food, but the ochel that you're interested in is called ochel, and what you're not interested in is called psolas. Or maybe it could be that we're not even talking about food at all. We'll discuss that. But for the purposes of the malach of borer, and maybe for Zorah as well, so ochel is what you want, and psolas is what you don't want. So using Jonathan and Ephraim's definition together, say, separating ochel from psolas through wind. Sammy, you wanted to comment on that?
Yeah, it may not have anything to do with open souls. It could be just the fact that you're dividing something into different pieces.
Oh, okay. So now Sammy's introducing that maybe the definition is a little more complicated. Right? Maybe it's not about good and bad, but maybe it's just about division. Right? Something being separated, A from B, and maybe we don't have any need to assign categories of ochel and psolas, but maybe any type of separation through wind might, is that what we're assuming through wind, or is there another clause there? So any separation through wind, right, might be enough in order to make it Zorah. Right?
It's also not necessarily through your hands. It's an indirect separation. Oh. You're causing, something else is doing it, but you're bringing it to that level.
So that's an interesting question. When you say it's not necessarily through your hands, what do you mean by not through your hands? What else could it be?
Well, Rashi mentions the pipe or whatever.
Oh, okay. So it could be that there's different types of utensils that are possibly being used. So we'll get to see how much of a role that plays. So that's, whether or not that should go as part of our definition. Maybe it should. Maybe that's so integral to the process that it's part of the definition. Or maybe that's secondary. That's an important point. Any other possibilities? Anything else that possibly should go out to the definition? Hi?
Are you necessarily separating two different things?
Maybe you're dividing one thing, subdividing it.
Right, I think that's what Sammy was saying. Yeah, I think that's what Sammy was saying, that it doesn't necessarily have to, you're adding that it's not necessarily good and bad, but maybe it's not even two different substances at all. Maybe anything that's being split, again, through wind, I assume.
Right,
anything being split through wind, perhaps, is already a part of Zohar. Any other possibilities? Anything else can be thrown into the mix as part of a definition here? Is there a possibility that maybe it's just using wind at all? Even not necessarily for the purposes of separation? Alan's nodding. Anybody else? Is that at all a possibility? Maybe.
So what would the malacha be
then? Ah, so what would the malacha be? So how are we going to define it? You're saying it's strange to have a malacha that's just about using something. Malacha has to have some type of a creative purpose. So the fact that you happen to have this cool power that you're calling upon, why should that make it a malacha? So that's an important question. That does seem to be an inadequate definition so far. But why are we putting it on the table at all? Why is any wind usage being considered? Jonathan?
That's what makes a difference from Bora and Morocco.
Oh, okay. So it's not necessarily the only answer, but that's an important point. So Jonathan's raising an issue that we're going to have to talk about, is that if it's about separation, and since Borer is about separation, so we need something significant to distinguish it. And that's what it sounds like. So we'll have to see a little bit. All of these possibilities are open. But what you may have picked up on through some of the suggestions. So we first started with a suggestion that was very comparable to Borer. Right? So Borer basically is separating a mixture, taking the good from the bad, or perhaps more precisely, taking the bad from the good. And from one perspective, it seems like Zohar is the same thing. What's the difference? Wind. Okay, so we put wind into the process. Then there were some other suggestions offered. Maybe it's not about good and bad. Maybe it's about any two things. Maybe it's not about two things, even one thing being split up. Maybe it's not even about separating. It's about using wind, even though nobody here wanted to suggest that. But maybe that's a possibility. So some of these definitions are moving away a little bit from Borer. So that's going to be a very significant issue just at the beginning. Is this essentially a form of Borer? And do we have possibly three Borer types of malachos? Or is this possibly a completely different creation? That's not necessarily about Borer. Maybe it has its own category completely. What's the first indication that really it is linked to Borer? The Gemara. Why? How does the Gemara make that implication? Oh, pretty strongly, right? Pretty clearly. It is Borer. And that's essentially our Gemara on Ayin Gimel Amud Beis. At first, the Gemara seems to suggest that HaZorah, HaBorer, VaHaTochen, VaHamarakev. So they have four malachos, but we take Tochen out. And we say, essentially, the three malachos seem to be identical. So says the Gemara, Hainu Zorah, Hainu Borer, Hainu Merakeid. This is the bottom of Ayin Gimel Amud Beis. They're all essentially identical. How are they identical? Rashi tells us. And the Gemara, Rashi, in the bottom line, that here, that the Mishnah had divided these up into three, the last line on the page, V'halo kulon malacha achasein, demafrish ochel min hapsoles. Right, so that Rashi, together with that Gemara, is taking a pretty strong stance on what's going on here. That essentially, Borer is the most famous of these three, but these are all the same thing. It's all about mafrish, good from bad, ochel from solas. And there are different ways to do it. What distinguishes the three? We'll have to figure it out. We'll probably get to that more tomorrow. What exactly gives each one its own category? But Rashi seems to be taking a pretty strong stance that that's what's going on. That's what Zora is. It's a form of Borer. Not just a form of Borer, but it's so close to Borer that really it should have been listed once. That's what this Gemara seems to be saying. So after commenting that they're all the same, the Gemara goes on to say, Abaye Virava Damri Travayu, Kol Milsa Dahavya Bamishkan, Top of Ayin Dalam Ralef, Afal Gav Deika Didamula, Chashavla. So even though there may be something on the list already that is comparable, nonetheless it gets counted. One of the nice things about being able to start this semester with Zora is that through the context of the sugya, it'll give us the opportunity, as we'll see as we go on, hopefully today and tomorrow, to revisit some of the introductory topics that we mentioned the first semester. So especially for those of you just joining us, there are a number of introductory principles that get emphasized through the sugya. So one of them is the whole concept of 39 malachos. Right, the whole idea that there are 39 different categories of malacha, ad malachos. So this is something we spent some time on last semester, that essentially is what the Mishnah tells us. There are 39 malachos, 39 actions for which one becomes chayav. And there is a concept of chiluch malachos, that the idea being that even though they should all be considered one iser, one violation of the Torah, the Torah doesn't name all these malachos, and the Torah doesn't list these off. The Torah just tells us not to violate Shabbos, not to do malacha. So theoretically, if I did two different malachos, and what's known as one helem and one distraction, so I should be obligated only one korban. But the Talmud tells us that we treat these different malachos as if they are distinct prohibitions, at least for the purposes of Kli. That it's as if there are 39 different Yisurim. Those are called the Av Malachos. And then we have Toldos. Toldos are also prohibited in our Torah. Very little difference between an Av and a Tolda. Just the Tolda is derived from one of these 39 basic Avos. And it was a debate in the Gemara where you get the number 39 from. Maybe it's a Gematria. Maybe it's about counting up words. We have the tradition that there are 39 categories that are derived from the Mishkan. And we also discussed that it's a little bit of a question, what does it mean to be derived from the Mishkan? First of all, it was a debate among the Rishonim. Do we only include that which was done in the construction of the Mishkan? That's the more common view, think of Rashi and others. Or do we even include that which was used in the day-to-day operations of the Mishkan? So, for example, all the malachas we're talking about now, the first 11 malachas, are known as Sidura Depas. This is the section talking about the process of bread, the 11 malachas necessary to make bread. So it says Rashi and Ayin Gimel. Really, that's a nice way to group them, but it's got nothing to do with the Mishkan. You didn't have to bake bread to construct the Mishkan. According to Rav Haigon, the reason we call it Sidura Depas is because bread was used in the Mishkan, the Lechem Hapanim. Rav Haigon is willing to include even things that happened once the Mishkan was already built, part of the operations of the Mishkan. But Rashi's view is that we only count that which was done in the construction of the Mishkan. So Sidura Depas is not really an accurate name, because it's not really about bread. Really, these malachos were used to make vegetables, to produce vegetables, to make the dyes, for the coloring of the Mishkan. So it's a fundamental debate about how these things happened in the Mishkan. And there's also a debate in the Rishonim, there's a posis from the beginning of Bava Kamma, about how much importance does it have to count? Do we count every action that was done in the Mishkan? Or just significant actions that were done in the Mishkan? So a lot of ambiguity as to how something makes the list. There's a lot of discussion about, okay, we look at the Mishkan, we have a tradition that there's supposed to be 39. How do we count up actions? How do we know what's different, what's the same? What counts as two, what counts as one? So
that's the Gemara's question here. And that essentially, all right, we separated things in the Mishkan, so let's just have one slot for separation, one category for Borer. Who needs Zorah and Merakit? So initially, what our Gemara says here is that, yeah, you're right. Could have been all one. Could have been that this could have all been one category. But since these different types were all done in the Mishkan, we pay more attention to that than the fact that they have an overwhelming similarity. Even though there is this strong linkage between the three, but all different types were done in the Mishkan, so they all get counted. So that's essentially the thrust of this passage over here, basically telling us that Zorah is a form of Borer, and you could have made a strong case not to count it at all. What's significant about it in order to make it countable, that we'll have to discuss a little bit more. But essentially, seems to be Borer. Talmud Yerushalmi, however, maybe takes a different view. Probably takes a different view. And this is a topic of much discussion. Anyone want to help me out here? How does Yerushalmi seem to be taking a different view? What psak does Yerushalmi have which may be different from what we've seen so far?
Scattering.
Well, what is it? What case does Yerushalmi talk about?
Spitting.
Right, so this is Yerushalmi. In the old printings, the standard printings, it's Memtes Amud Aleph. As I mentioned, it's a little hard sometimes to identify in the Marmakomos exactly where the Yerushalmis are, but it's in the bottom, it's in Perek Zayin Halacha Beis, on the bottom of Memtes Amud Aleph. Those of you who may be newer to learning topics of Shabbos, so you'll see that often there are significant differences between the way the Yerushalmi relates to a Malacha and the way the Bavli relates to a Malacha. Just as the seventh parak in the Bavli and the Yerushalmi is where a lot of the major malacha sugyas come up, so you find a lot of parallel passages and a lot of parallel discussions, but very often there are some significant differences. And possibly this may be one of the most significant differences, because if they are as different as they seem, and it's a topic of significant discussion, the Yerushalmi might have a completely different definition of what's going on here. So says the Yerushalmi, Rakach v'hifrichaso haruach. Let's say somebody spits into the wind. And the wind, therefore, scatters the spit. Chayiv mishum zoreh. That is a violation of zoreh. V'chol davar shum mechus l'ruach. Chayiv mishum zoreh. And anything that is lacking wind, and this is lacking some words, but apparently you are providing wind that it was lacking, and you can't really provide wind, you're providing essentially access to wind, you put something to the wind, so that makes you chayav mishum zorah. So why is this a little bit of a surprise? It's not clear that this has anything to do with Borer, right? Sorry?
It's about the wind.
It's focusing on the wind, right? But the idea of separating good from bad, so that's not usually what people are doing when they're spitting. It's not clear that that's at all involved. And if we look at the major commentaries on the side of the page of the Yerushalmi, is the Pnei Moshe and the Korban HaEdah, so just to see how they fill this out. So here about Rakak and the word spitting, says the Pnei Moshe, Kineged HaRuach, opposite the wind, you spit. Okay, it separates the rope. You are chayiv mishum zorah. And then he goes on to say, v'chol davar shum mechusel ruach. What does that mean? Klomar sh'al yedei haruach hu naaseh, u bilti haruach lo hayenaseh. Chayiv mishum zorah. That it happens through the wind. And without the wind, it wouldn't have happened. So you are chayiv because of zorah in such a case. And says the Korban HaEdah on the other side of the page, Perish Shaharuach Mechasro Umefaro L'chalokim Dakin Chayiv Mishum Zorah. So there's a different focus here. Here the Korban HaEdah emphasizes that the wind
is breaking, the wind was missing. So now here you are putting that there, umafaru l'chalokim dakim, and you are splitting it up into small pieces. Chayiv mishum zora. There's a different focus from the Korban Ha'edah and the Pnei Moshe. Right? The Korban Ha'edah is emphasizing that you are dividing something into smaller pieces, and the Pnei Moshe is not focusing on that so much. So that may already give us now three possible definitions, all of which were suggested before, that the Bavli seems to see this as a straight Borer concept, good from bad, bad from good. And the Yerushalmi gives us an example which is not necessarily about good from bad. So in the Korban Ha'edah's definition, it is about separating it into smaller pieces. That was what Sammy had brought up before. So maybe that's a necessary component. But even if it is, it's still not the same as Borer, because Borer requires good and bad. And here we're not talking about that anymore, it seems. And in the Pnei Moshe, it's not clear that we're even interested in the separation at all. Right? The Pnei Moshe seems to be saying that anything that needs the wind to happen, and you're providing the wind, that's the malach. And as Aaron correctly asked before, we're going to need a better definition than that, because we don't have such an idea that a malach is any usage of some form. A malacha has to have some constructive definition. If this malacha is just using wind, it's going to be a very different model from any malacha that we've seen so far. Sammy?
Didn't the Pnei Moshe also mention the fact that it was separating in the wind in the Gemara before that?
Yeah, but here where he's defining, he was explaining the Gemara. But the Gemara says that's what's happening, so he just explains that. And now when he says Mishum Zorah, here he's articulating a principle. So the principle of the Gemara has called Davar, he's saying, Klomar, what does that principle mean? And there he's not focusing on separating. So it doesn't sound like from that part, which could be taken by itself, because he's explaining the principle that the Gemara goes on to say, doesn't sound like he's requiring division per se.
And also, isn't Rashi the only one that entered into the definition of Solas?
In general, the Gemara about Borer, or about Zorah?
Yeah, about Zorah. Meaning he said that all of them are the same because of the separation of Ochel and Tolos.
So you want to say that without Rashi,
it would be separating.
Okay, could be. But even so, it's still going to take it away from Borer. So you want to make Borer a little broader.
Yeah, meaning they're not talking about the pratim of each halacha. Borer has its own pratim of Ochel and Tolos. Meraki might have its own pratim, but their general tzura is the same.
So basically what you want to suggest is that they could be significantly different from each other, but that could still fit within the Bavli.
You're right.
But maybe.
The Tosfos.
Says
like it also.
Okay, we'll look at that. Yes?
Is it possible that, typically we think of Zohar as when you have the chaff and wheat, and chaff takes the wind, separates the light stuff from the heavy stuff. Mm-hmm. Would it be possible that with spitting, it also happens that spit can be made of a couple of things and light stuff falls off.
So there are those who suggest that, as we'll see. So first, let's try to find out how this Bavli Yerushalmi maps out. Then we'll point out that there are some interpretations that try to assume the Yerushalmi is more consistent with the Bavli, and there are those who say along those lines. We'll mention it, we'll hopefully get to it in a few minutes. The Chemdes Yisrael says something along those lines. So it could be that there is an approach like that.
Centrifuge.
Okay. So first, the science teacher. So first, what we have, what seems to be a machlokus between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. It seems that the Bavli, at least on the surface, is basically identifying Zorah very closely with Borer, and the Yerushalmi giving us an example that does not seem to fit into Borer, and might give us a whole different model. Any questions about that so far? Okay, it's also interesting to see, and maybe some of you got to see it this morning, that if you look towards the end of this halacha in the Yerushalmi, this is halacha Beis, so before halacha Gimel, so the Yerushalmi has a very similar statement to the Bavli, but with a crucial difference. Right, what does the Yerushalmi say? Haborer v'hamishamer v'hamarakeid kulon mishum mavir psoles. So that's very similar to the statement in the Bavli, with a crucial difference. What's the crucial difference? Right, doesn't say Zorah. Zorah got dropped off the list. Right, so here, the Yerushalmi lists three malachos that are about separating psoles. Borer, like the Yerushalmi, Merachid, like the Yerushalmi, and Meshamer. Meshamer, which is not on our list of 39 malachos. Meshamer, which is a sugya later on in Shabbos, is also a form of sifting. It's not clear exactly which one it lines up with, and the Gemara has a whole discussion how exactly to classify it. So here, the Yerushalmi puts that into this category as three actions which are all about separating psolas. So it's striking that it leaves out Zorah. The Bavli identifies Zorah with these two, and Yerushalmi doesn't. So this may be another indication that the Yerushalmi and the Bavli see Zorah differently. Zorah is about separation according to the Bavli, and maybe the Yerushalmi doesn't think so, because it leaves it out of this list. The question is, does it mean to leave it out of the list? So, it's interesting here, if you look again at the Korban Ha'eda and the Pnei Moshe over here, so if you look at the Korban Ha'eda, you see he changes the girsa. Korban Ha'eda thinks that the Yerushalmi has a mistaken text over here. And says the Korban Ha'eda, Hachi Garsinan, Haborer v'hazoreh v'hamarakit. Puts it back to the text of the Bavli, that the three malachas we're talking about include Zoreh. V'lo Garsinan Meshamer, the Hamishamer, O told us Borer or told us Marakit. He could then read on the Elbe Pirkei. That Meshamer is a told of one of the other two. So it shouldn't be a list here of the three Avs. It's not one of them, and really the Gemara means to say, the Yerushalmi here means to include Borer, just as does the Bavli. Jonathan?
When we say that he has a Girsa changer, are we assuming that this is how he was trying to be Yashiv, or he legitimately had a Girsa when said like that?
Sounds like he had a Girsa. He says, Hachi Garsina, and it could be that he just feels that the text pushes itself that way. But he says, this is what it should mean. It should match the Bavli, and especially because Meshamer just is not qualified to be on this list in terms of stature. This is a list of avos. Meshamer is not an av. It shouldn't be on the list anyway. It should be listed separately. So presumably he felt that there were indications that this would be this text should be different.
It's not going to be secure between the Yerushalmi, the previous Yerushalmi and this one?
So maybe not. So how is it not a stira? Because the Korban Ha'eda will have to put him together with his other comment, the previous Yerushalmi. So there, he was the one who emphasizes division. Right, we mentioned before the Pnei Moshe just talks about using wind, and he talks about division. So apparently division is enough to put it in the Borer category. Even though it was different, because it doesn't seem to have a psolus ochel component, but that's enough for him, apparently. And the Pnei Moshe over here, the Pnei Moshe doesn't change the gears. If you take a look, Pnei Moshe here says, V'yeshein krovin, v'yafal pikin, hen rechokin, b'inyin achiev, sh'arei ha'borer, v'hamashamer, v'hamarakir, kulu m'shamaver psolos, v'krovin, v'ein malacha achas hen.
Isn't the
malacha
that
malacha
shen esirchel gufre nechayev?
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, if he spits something and it's literally here, what's the question in the
Okay, so you're asking a very important question, which you may have gotten a chance to see, that Rishonim asked, the Balamor asked, because it involves the whole explanation. So the question of whether or not this is a Malach Shein Tzricha L'Gufa, so we have to first talk about what a Malach Shein Tzricha L'Gufa means, which we talked about extensively last semester, but we'll recap it here a little bit for what's relevant here. And we'll see if we get up to it today or not, but that's the question the Rishonim asked. That does this seem to be a malacha that should be categorized as a malacha shein tzricha l'gufa, which I'm not yet defining. We'll define it. We'll get to it. And that's a question about the fundamental category of this whole malacha. So it's a question the Baal HaMor talks about. We'll get to it either in the next few minutes or at the beginning of tomorrow. Okay, so it does seem we have two indications. Either one could be read in different ways, but we have two indications that there's a very significant difference between the Yerushalmi and the Bavli on this issue. The example of spitting, which does not seem to fit a general Borer category, and the fact that the Yerushalmi and the Bavli seem to have two different groupings of three, both indicating that maybe they see things a little bit differently. The Egle Tal, it's a sefer we often refer to. The Egle Tal was written by the Sacha Chever Rebbe, the author of the Chuvas Avnei Nezer, a very important sefer on Hilchos Shabbos. So the Egle Tal suggests also that the Yerushalmi is consistent with its view with Shitaso here, because the Yerushalmi, we'll see when we talk about Borer, so the Yerushalmi differs from the Bavli in another point, that when the Yerushalmi defines Borer, it requires complete tikkun. It requires that you have gotten rid of all of the bad stuff. If you've only taken away half of the psolas, half of the bad stuff, and you still have some mixed in, so the Yerushalmi seems to believe that that's not called Borer. The Yerushalmi has a scenario that you could be sitting all day and be doing what looks like Borer and not be in violation of Borer, because apparently until you finish the job, it's not Borer. So how does that fit into this discussion? Why does that kind of also lend to Zora and Borer being different from each other?
Because Borer is obviously, even if you just threw it in the wind and the wind just blew it, you're already high.
Right, so basically what you're saying is that in that scenario of throwing something in the wind, it's essentially impossible to believe that it's such a perfect process. You can't, it just doesn't work that way, that throwing something up into the air and letting the wind sift it for you, it's going to do a 100% perfect job. When you're doing the normal Borer, so okay, you can fully perfect something. But by throwing something into the wind, so it'll blow away a lot of the garbage, it's not going to blow away all the garbage. So it's essentially very difficult to see Zora as something that could fit that definition of Borer. The Yerushalmi's definition, the Yerushalmi's standard for Borer, is already very difficult to match Zora. You're using the wind to separate, it's hard to believe it's going to be able to fulfill what the Yerushalmi requires in order for it to be called Borer. So that's the point the Egle Tal makes. It seems to be, again, another indication that the Yerushalmi does not see Zora and Borer as being identified with each other.
Hi. You need to do a perfect malacha of Zora?
Not in general, no, not always. But it seems to be just within the malacha of Borer. Well, by definition, we have to say it's not always, because that's where this distinction is coming from. But when it comes to Borer, so the Yerushalmi has that statement. We'll look at it again more directly when we're in Borer. But we talked about it a little bit in Dosh also, that the Yerushalmi has that statement that a person can be sitting all day pulling things out of a pile and he won't be in violation of Borer, because until it's perfect, it's not Borer. That's not a principle of all malachas. It's true here specifically.
Does it say anywhere what's the shear of Zohar?
So the shear, it turns to be, so that's an interesting question we'll get into also. The shear of all of these first 11 malachas, almost all. There's a little bit of discussion about Zoreya, about planting, and Chorish is also different, but in general, the Sidur of the past, we use a standard of a grogros, a dried fig. That seems to be the standard for, yeah, sorry? Not necessarily, no. Not for Chorish. Yeah, we were talking now, it's the exception of Chorish. Yeah, no, the exception of Chorish and possibly Zoreya. All the other Sidur of the past, we have a standard of a grogros, which is a food-based shear, specifically because these are food-based malachos.
But does it say shear of how much chinina you got to make it in the Sidur?
Also, to what degree, a percentage-wise?
Maybe Zoreya is going to be the same thing, but you have to toil in the air until it's going to be completely
You mean shear in terms of percentage, not in terms of how much you're dealing with. Right, so that's what the Yerushalmi seems to be saying, that there is a shear by Borer. And in terms of Zoreya, so it's very hard to define it that way. It seems to be inherent in the process that you can't get 100%.
But also in Borer, you can get 100% in
stool. Well, in Borer, theoretically. In Borer, you could. In Borer, theoretically, it's possible. We may not require it. The Bavli probably doesn't require it. So the halacha, it's not going to come up as much. But the Yerushalmi, at least theoretically, you may see that as a requirement. So that would give us, if that's the case, that gives us then three reasons to think the Yerushalmi disagrees. The spitting example doesn't match. The group of three is different than the two. And the standard of Borer doesn't seem to work for Zora. Now, before we run out of time, we'll have to continue this topic tomorrow. There's a very important passage in the Gemara in Bava Kamma, if you got a chance to see it, which also leaves a lot of room for speculation. And we have to also wonder if it's a part of the that Gemara in the Bavli and Bava Kamma, is it a part of the thought process of the Bavli? So you got a chance to see the Gemara in Bava Kamma. I don't have a Bava Kamma here. I have one over here if no one has a physical Gemara. But just look at this passage quickly. The Gemara in Bava Kamma, as would be expected, is talking about Nezikin. It's talking about your liability for damaging property. So what happens if I damage somebody's property with a fire? So let's say there's a fire already and I fan the flames. I cause the fire to increase, I cause the fire to move around, and therefore damage somebody's stuff. So how do I bear liability for that? So the Mishnah talks about a situation where one could be exempt because the fire was fanned not by you, but by the wind. So here the Gemara says in Daf Samach Amar Aleph from Bava Kamma, Tana Rabbana, Liba Vilibsa Haruach. What if you have a partnership? You do a little bit of the fanning, and the wind does some of the fanning. So then what? Im Yesh Bilibuyav Kedelu Volsa, Chayim V'im Lav Pater. If you put in enough effort that it could have done the job, regardless of the wind, so then you'll be Chayim, and if not, you're Pater. So why should you be Pater, asks the Gemara. Amai Lehave Kizore V'ruach Misayaso. Why don't we say that it's comparable to what we find in Hilchas Shabbos? Right? That in Hilchas Shabbos we find that a person can throw something into the wind, and the wind's going to do a lot of the work, and he's chayiv, he's in violation of a malacha. So let's say the same thing here too. That if you fan a flame, but you let the wind do most of the work, even if your fanning wouldn't have been enough, and the wind is the major active partner, let's say the same thing, the same way, you're chayiv in Hilchas Shabbos, let's say you should be chayiv in Nezikin. So Gemara has a little bit of a discussion about it, which we will skip and get to the end, where the Gemara says a fascinating principle right before the Mishnah. Ravashi Omar, Ki Amrinan Zorev Ruach Misayaso, when we say that there is liability for somebody who throws something into the wind and the wind helps him out, Hani Mile Leinian Shabbos, that's only true for Shabbos purposes. Why? Key word, the key phrase that comes up all the time whenever we distinguish Shabbos from something else. De Meleches Machsheves Asra Torah. Aval Hacha Grama Ba'almahu, Vagrama Benezikin Potter. That in the context of Bava Kamma, in the context of damages, so it's a grama. What you did is causational. You're at a remove. You caused the wind to pick it up, and then the wind did the work. You are separated from this action. So why shouldn't that be true when it comes to Shabbos also? Because Meleches Machsheves. A fascinating point. It's very unclear what it means. Dove? For Dove or David? It's all good. Okay. Dove?
When we started tomorrow, the first question that the Gemara asked was that they all the same. Mm-hmm. Maybe this is the difference, that in Borer you're actually doing something, you're taking the soil out of the ochel. Mm-hmm. But when you're doing the survey, you didn't do anything, you just threw something in the ear. And it's like, logically, you should be potter because you didn't do anything, that's why the Gemara comes and says it.
Okay, so you're picking up an important point. But which we're not totally addressing yet. It's an important point. The question is that maybe this is an element of why we distinguish between Borer and Zorer. That's a good question, a good point to raise. We'll probably get to that a little bit tomorrow. But here, just in terms of understanding this Gemara before we apply it to Borer, so what is the difference here between Nezikin and Shabbos? Why is it that Nezikin your partner and Shabbos your chayv? Melachas not Shabbos. But what does that mean? What is that phrase, Melachas not Shabbos, which, by the way, we have never fully taken on head-on to try to define what Melachas not Shabbos means, and this is a little bit of another push to do so. What does the phrase Melachas not Shabbos mean? What is this Gemara telling us? But okay, you should have been Pater, but, boop, magic words, Melachas not Shabbos. Does this Gemara give us any clue as to what Melachas not Shabbos means, practically? Jonathan?
See, maybe because it goes back to what we were saying with the Mishkan. It was something Chashuv done in the Mishkan, so therefore, no matter how are you going to do it, you're going to be chayav for not Shabbos.
Okay, so there's a distinction to this. There's a chashivus to it. See, part of the room to have a little bit of confusion is that in general, this comes up in Hebrew usage as well. So chashivus, the word machshavas lends itself to a couple of interpretations. It could come from machshava, from intent, or it could come from chashivus, as the Gemara connects chashivus to the definition of malacha in the beginning of Bava Kamma. So here you have the same question. So malachas machshavas. So what is it that is the key factor here? So you're focusing on chashivus. It means that this is something which is relevant, is significant. So maybe it's at a remove, but its significance level is enough for it to be on the Shabbos list.
So what's the Gemara's answer?
So then that way it's basically saying that this is a significant action, even though in Nezikin it's causational. So Nezikin doesn't have this principle of Malachas Machshavas. That's the Chiddush by Shabbos, that something that is significant is going to be chayav. You could have phrased it differently. You could have focused on something else.
The other way, so
okay.
Better. Yeah. Another way would say that Malach Machshavah means that in Shabbos it's not about Chashivus, but about the Machshavah you meant. So in Ezekiel, you have to do something. You have to do damage. I don't care what you're thinking. If you didn't do the actual damage, you put it because you didn't do it.
Okay.
But
so
in
you.
Shabbos, there is the Kumar that Malach Machshavah means that even if you did something that you didn't actually do the Maaseh, like you just say here, you didn't separate two things. You just threw it in the air. Because you were thinking about doing something, even though you didn't actually do the... I mean, you did something. If you didn't do anything, you just were thinking about something, you're for sure going to be bothered. But if you did something that was not the actual melacha, but that caused the melacha, and you thought about causing the melacha, you're going to be chayav. That's the melacha.
Okay, you could be right. So I think what Jonathan and Dover present here are two valid approaches to what Melachas Machshavas is and what we can read from this Gemara. Right, it could be telling us that your fulfillment of your plan, of your machshava, is significant, and that makes it something that you're chayav for.
You can combine like both of them together. It's also
your intent together with the action. Or it could be that they're related ideas as well. Right. Or it could be that there is some inherent significance factor, which Melachas Machshavas indicates, which puts Shabbos on a different standard. And we're almost out of time, and I don't want to keep people late on Tuesday because I know it makes them miss Bible or miss lunch. So I will just quickly address this, and we'll get into it a little bit more tomorrow, is that this may be relevant to a machlokas, the Rush and the Yad Ramah, if it is a machlokas. Did anybody get to see either of those? Okay, so in general, by the way, in terms of the Mar Makomos for today, there's a lot left over for tomorrow. That's pretty much the case. Yeah. Okay. So we may add some tomorrow, we may not, but you'll have tomorrow's a longer Seder and a longer Shir. But if you look at the Rush and the Yad Rama, so I'll just also tell you, you'll look at it and we'll talk about it tomorrow, the Yad Rama is extremely long. So you'll make your own decision. Maybe we'll have it printed out in advance for tomorrow, the Yad Rama, to give out to people. It's extremely long. You'll make your own prioritization decision, how much time to spend on it if you have other makoros to see first. It also does somewhat repeat itself, so you could read half of it and get a sense of what he's saying and decide to stop. That's your call, but he keeps on talking about it more. So you'll make your own decision time-wise. But for tomorrow, try to look at the Rush and the Yad Rama, who talk about different perspectives about what this means. And then we'll see that this could also be reflected in some very practical halachic issues which have to do with Grumma technology today. We'll talk about some literature that affects that. And then we'll plug that back into this whole discussion of what this malacha means. So this malacha, as less well known as it is compared to other malachas, has a lot of relevance to basic Shabbos principles, and the existence of Zorah on the malacha list may have implications for all the other malachas. So don't underestimate Zorah. It's a very significant malacha, even if it's not one that comes up so often in your discussion of Hilchos Shabbos. And God willing, tomorrow we'll see a little bit more about how that plays out. Any questions that have been done today so far? Everybody good?